Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to. Lots to talk about. It's the holiday season. Yes, the holiday season upon us. And tis the season for a government shutdown. A good time for government shutdown, right? And why would we want a government shutdown? Well, because the Republicans need it. They need a good hostage crisis. They need something to help the economy tank a little bit. They need to stop the vaccine mandates, which I've been getting tons of emails saying, good conservatives, shut the government down because we want to stop these evil mandates. And of course, they want to stop the Build Back Better plan because that's what Republicans do. And it's not surprising, nothing shocking here, because as you know, December 3rd, just around the corner, that is the funding deadline. That is, and it's quickly approaching. And we're looking down the barrel of probably the fourth government shutdown since 2018. And you go, why? Well, because they need it. They need the chaos. And look, you know, the fourth since 18, forget about all the near misses that we had during the Obama years, where for those 6 years where Republicans controlled the House, the GOP really thought they were Kiefer Sutherland in that TV show 24, creating another ticking bomb moment down to the last moment. Could we destroy the globe? Could the global economy go toilet first? And then at the last second, oh, we got our pound of flesh. Democrats were willing to cave. Remember ScrewQuester? I do. And this, again, this is what Republicans do, because here's the reality. Democrats understand. Republicans are willing to burn the house down. They are willing to burn the house down and kill everybody inside. There's no question about that. And what they want to do is they want to stop the economy from rebounding. They hope the inflation gets worse. They're hoping for more economic chaos. This is who they are. You remember the day that Obama took office? You had Mitch McConnell. We're going to make him a one-term president. You had the titular head of the Republican Party, Rush Limbaugh, saying, I hope he fails. This is the same thing. This is what they're doing. And as President Biden tweeted out today, he said, quote, one Republican senator said that rising prices were a, quote, gold mine for Republicans politically. He said, imagine rooting for higher costs for American families just to score a few political points. Yes! It's what they do, man. When are we going to get it through the thick skulls that this is what they do? This is who they are. This is what they want. They don't want things getting better. They're very happy with the way things are. A wealth class that is firmly in control of our politics and our economy. Consolidation of our economy, not monopolization of our economy, getting bigger and bigger. So a handful of people control all of the wealth, all of the power, all of the means of production. And well, the working class, we, the rest of us, we scurry and fight and are easily divided and sliced and diced and pitted against each other for what crumbs are left. And sadly, the crumbs are getting smaller and smaller. So they're happy with the high inflation. They get something to complain about. They're happy with the fact that, oh, gee, we don't think there are jobs. Weirdly enough, this president has created almost 6 million jobs in his 10 months. If you really believe that it's the president's job. And the same people who brought you, we shouldn't do anything on the virus. I'm getting a ton of emails from Khan saying, well, we need to shut down the economy, close the purse strings, so Biden can't respond. At a time, and I love this, at a time when a new variant is coming online. This is the brilliance of the Republican Party. They don't care about you. They don't care about me. They didn't care about their own voters, which is why, you know, during the Trump years, they were having big rallies, big super spreader events. For them, it's just about scoring political points. And we're coming on to the next, possibly the next wave, this Omicron. This is coming. And congratulations, California. You are the winner. You have the first case, evidently. And understand, Republicans are going to blame California when it happens. See, it was at California. And not, you know, the fact that their horrible policies are going to help spread it. Never mind that. Also, they want to stop the Build Back Better plan. We talked about this yesterday. They are all a tizzy. Oh, with inflation, we can't do anything. We can't possibly help the economy. And as I said, look, you know, our Republican friends, they are eager to push the dynamite button. They're eager to blow up the House. They're eager to blow up the Biden presidency just for their own gain. This is not new. Nothing new here, folks. And I'm sitting here and I'm having some people going, can you believe this? I'm going, yes. Yes, because this is who they are. And I hope at some point we wake up to that. You have a political party that is crazy. They're off their meds. And as I said, California, congratulations, you're the winner. First case of Omicron. We're going to see where this takes us. Also, the big news today, the Supreme Court, every indication from the court. And you didn't even need to listen to the questions. You didn't need any reporting coming out of this Supreme Court that Roe versus Wade is going to go the way of the dodo bird. It's done. This is going to be something that's going to go back and you're going to have to fight in the states. And look, this is maybe an opportunity. Maybe this is an opportunity to start mobilizing people, that you have a political party, the Republicans, who are attempting to undo every bit of progress of the 20th century. I had someone today go, can you believe they're willing to overturn 50 years of precedent? And I go, yeah, they just a couple years ago overturned 40 plus years of precedent in the Abood decision, when they overturned Abood for Janus. Basically making the public sector workplace a right to work nation. You know, right to work for poverty rate wages, right to work for less health insurance, right to work for less retirement security, right to work for, you know, no job security. You know, the whole no rights at work agenda, where there are no rights and no work. But hey, it sounds nice. Fits on a bumper sticker, it does. And keeps some stupid people stupid. But here's the thing, and this is what's bugging me. You look at this, and people have been holding their breath, and, oh, will it happen? Will it happen? Yes, it's going to happen. That's the reason Trump was installed. And if you listened to conservative voters, they didn't care about that he was a con man. They didn't care about that he was a philanderer. They didn't care about any of his bankruptcies or his business practices or his horrible personality or the fact that he was going to rob, steal, and grift his way through his 4 years, which he did. Never mind that. He was going to put people on the Supreme Court to overturn Roe, to attack workers' rights. And that's what he did. And this is one of those moments where you go, here's the reality. We have a two-party system in this country. And one of those parties is crazy. They've lost their flipping mind. And I always go back to the Dwight David Eisenhower quote. Wrote a letter to his brother Edgar saying, hey, you know, if there you ever anyone in our political history would come out against unemployment insurance, the farm bill, labor laws, Social Security, any of those New Deal policies that were extraordinarily popular, anybody come out against those, you know, you would never hear from them again. You'd see there are a couple, you know, Texas oil millionaires, some businessmen, but their numbers are negligible and they are stupid. Stupid is running the crazy party. stupid is running one of our main political parties. And you would think, if you have one of the two major political parties attacking a woman's right to choose, attacking the American's right to vote, attacking the right of association by joining and forming a union, and cheering for people who wanted to literally overthrow our elections and overthrow our government, you would think the other would go, huh, maybe we should, oh, I don't know. Remember that televangelist from a number of years ago? Don't just sit there, do something. Maybe they should do something. Just a thought. Try it. It might work. Now, I do understand. You've got Joe Manchin. You've got Kyrsten Sinema. You've got the backstops for the wealth class. That's why they're there. I get that. But now would be a really good time for Democrats to immediately put forth a piece of legislation and go, we're going to guarantee a woman's right to choose. Going to do that. And if you have to undo the filibuster, you have to undo it. Because understand, the other side, if they get something that they want, there is no question that they're going to undo the filibuster. Remember, during the Trump years, there's only one thing they really wanted. There's only one thing they really wanted. Everything else they could do through, executive order, which Trump did a bunch of times. They wanted to rob the coffers. They wanted to steal from the till. And they did, to the tune of almost $2 trillion. And they handed it out to the wealthy, and the wealthy were very happy. Thank you very much. Big corporations, very happy. Thank you very much. Working class, well, we didn't get much. We got to pay for it. We got to, live through diminished opportunities and lower opportunities for our children. And then the second that Democrats take power again, we hear it again. Oh, we can't afford education for children. We can't afford universal pre-K. Yeah, we're the party of family values. We're going to tell you that over and over. But when it comes to actually being someone who believes in family values, family leave, so that if you're sick or a loved one's sick, or you're welcoming a new child into the world, that you get to take a couple of weeks off and not go broke doing it. Family value kind of stuff. They're against that. And this is where I'm going, it's time for the Democrats to, while you still have a chance, undo the filibuster, guarantee a woman's right to choose, guarantee voters' right to have access to the ballot box, guarantee workers' rights to join and form unions, and do those things. Now, there'll be people who go, but Rick, the Republicans will come in and they'll undo all that. And this is why voting matters. This is why engaging voters matters. Because these are popular things. These are things we the people want. We the people want access to the ballot box. Large numbers. We the people believe, it's 60-40, that a woman should have the right to choose. I'll go to the ballot box with that. Overwhelmingly, people believe that workers should have the right to join and form unions. Yes. Yes, they should. But sadly, what's happened is the moneyed interests in this, they've decided. They've bought an entire political party. They control that entire party. The moneyed interests control it. Look, some of the kooks have taken over a little bit. Some of the Q-nuts and those. They've taken over a little. We're now seeing the kind of the little internal rift that's going on. But the moneyed interests control that party. And sadly, the Democratic Party too, to an extent. This is why it comes back to us. It comes back to you and me. It comes back to us being active and engaged. It comes back to us standing up and fighting for the policies that we want to make lives better. At the end of the day, I say this all the time, I don't care who brings it to the floor. If there's a piece of legislation that's going to make people's lives better, I'm in favor of it. It's about getting things done for me. Had Trump come out with an infrastructure bill on day one, I would have been one of the first people to say, yes, we need to support an infrastructure bill. Now he goes in and said, well, we're going to build an infrastructure bill. We're going to hand it all off to corporations and we're going to gut prevailing wage. We got a problem. And those are the fights that you have. But you got to have them. It's amazing to me that Trump didn't move forward on prevailing wage because he was angry at the Democrats. It's quite bizarre. And that's what happens when you have a thin-skinned leader like that. But we're in this moment. And, you know, the abortion issue, I've said it before, it's not my issue. As a man, I don't think I have any say in what a woman does with her body. I'm not personally in favor of abortion, but I think it should be safe and legal. What's going to be interesting when this goes away, and I do believe that it will. I don't see any way that the Mississippi case gets turned down. And I do believe that they've called for a total, push to repeal the whole, to undo the whole thing. What this then becomes is an interesting moment where do you start holding men accountable? You know, my mother raised me as a single mother. There was he ran off and there was nothing to hold him accountable. Do we now have a moment where you go, okay, well, if you're going to force a woman to have that child, we're going to force that man to pay for it. Going to be interesting to see how many people go, gee, I'm not so in favor of this anymore. And the fights will revert back to the states where there may be an opportunity to have some real ground up grassroots movement building. You know, all of the things that happened in the New Deal, all the things that FDR moved forward on, those were done by grassroots organizers. Those were done by people in the streets. The same thing with Roe. All of this stuff was done because you had movements of people saying, we don't want women dying in alleys. I don't want my daughters to live in that world. Because here's what I know. I know rich women, they're going to get the care that they need. The people we're going to find in alleys are going to be poor and working class women. And that to me is unacceptable. And it should be unacceptable to everyone. If you want people to have children, create an economy and a place where you want to bring children into this world. You don't force them, especially not like this. But hey, this is what our conservative friends do. This is who they are. The question is, will Democrats, will they ball up their little digits? Will they get into the ring and start duking it out? Are they going to swing back over this? Are they going to actually pursue some legislation to move us in the right direction? We'll see. But it's going to come down to you and me picking up the phone, calling them daily and saying, you know what? You should be doing that and you should be doing it now. Going to take a quick break right here. When we come back and talk a little bit about Rosa Parks Day. It is that day. Quick break, right back. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1912. That was the day the Anaconda Copper Company instituted its rustling card system at its mines in Butte, Montana. The company used the rustling cards in two ways. First, as a work permit, and then as a way to keep track of miners. A miner looking for work would first have to apply for a card. Miners had to present information about citizenship status, English literacy skills, work history, and 2 years of employer references. Once the card was approved, the miners would then be allowed to apply for work. The Butte Miners Union charged that it was the company's way of blacklisting those who had quit, been fired, or known as union militants. By 1917, the Metal Mine Workers Union and the IWW added that the company was looking to nip agitation in the bud. They alleged employers were holding onto cards or denying them altogether for no reason. According to historian Paul Brissenden, both unions maintained the company was looking to, quote, punish those who were at one time active in the socialist administration of Butte Mayor Lewis J. Duncan to prevent the Socialist Party from again securing a foothold in Butte to strengthen the hands of the more conservative unions and to curb the industrial unionism of the IWW and Metal Mine Workers Union. The company asserted its right to keep out its enemies out of the mines, alleging they presented a danger to mine safety. But the unions shot back, stating the blacklist meant the hiring of untrained, inexperienced workers who presented the real danger. Brissenden notes that many union radicals continued to work in the mines despite the card system.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So back in 2015, we had done a labor history tour looking at labor's involvement in the civil rights movement. And it all came out of, honestly, it all came out of my oldest daughter coming home from school. And, you know, you have that conversation. You know, hey, what'd you learn in school today? And, oh, I learned about Rosa Parks. I go, what'd you learn? Oh, she was tired. Oh, is that it? Yeah, that's about it. And they go, I think there's a lot more to that story than, well, that. And sadly, that's all she was taught. So it gave me the idea that, you know, we need to get back out on the road and find the places where, you know, the civil rights history was and find labor's involvement. And one of the places we went was the Rosa Parks Museum on the campus of Troy University in Montgomery, Alabama. And, you know, I had an incredible conversation with the person who was the director at the time. I think she still may be, Felicia Bell, and got an incredible tour from Ricky Brown. It was an eye-opening experience for me in that there was so much of the history that I didn't know, but learning about, as I said a moment ago, the organizing, the activism, the people in the streets, that stuff, really important. And here to share some thoughts on, well, this day, Rosa Parks Day, I've asked Madeline Burkhard to come talk with us. She's the adult education coordinator and curator there at the Rosa Parks Museum at Troy University. Madeline, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you so much for asking us to come on tonight.
So like I said, you know, a lot of us learned, hey, you know, she was tired. You know, she was sitting in the front of the bus. They asked her politely to move. She refused because she was tired. All of that stuff. And that's not actually what happened.
Right, exactly. There are a couple of myths around what happened on December 1st, 1955. One of those would be, you know, that she was just physically tired because she was working all day and her feet hurt. And, you know, I'm sure that's true too, but it was more of a mental and spiritual tired of giving in. And that is something that we have really tried to push into people as they visit the museum, that she wasn't just tired, but tired of the racism, tired of the sexism, tired of every ism.
Sick and tired, fed up and tired. Exactly. And one of the other things that I learned, and I didn't know this, is that she wasn't actually in the front of the bus.
Right. So she was in an area where she could be completely fine. And it was kind of the up front of the, what was known as like the colored section back then, like the end of the white section. So she was in a fine area according to the laws back then. But the law was if the bus started to fill up, which it did that evening, and white passengers were to get on, people who were not white were supposed to give up their seats to those who were getting on the bus. And she didn't want to do it. And I don't blame her one bit.
Nope. Yeah, and so much for chivalry. I mean, you know, because she wasn't a young woman. I mean, you know, she was in her, you know, she was middle-aged at the time.
Mm-hmm. 42. She was 42. And a lot of people also have this mental image of her being like in her 80s or something, this very short, elderly woman who she was actually taller than me.
And well trained. I mean, again, when you start to delve into this a little bit better, you find out she took some activism training at the Highlander Center, which, you know, did a lot of that, you know, originally did labor organizing and then was civil rights organizing. And part of this whole thing was, you know, really a part of an activist movement, wasn't it? Was it not?
Oh, yes. All of that. People had this training back then from Highlander and then just, you know, from mass meetings that they went to here in Montgomery and other places. They had to learn how to peacefully protest. And I'm not sure if you've ever been to the Atlanta, I always get the name wrong. It's the Civil and Human Rights Center there, right by the World of Coke. But they have an excellent exhibition where you have to put yourself kind of in the shoes of the lunch counter sit-in.
Yep.
And people are yelling at you, and you have a timer going to see how long you last. And I lasted 13 seconds.
Yeah, I wouldn't have lasted at all.
No, I could not do it. And, like, this is something that, you know, I've done every day for 5.5 years is tell this story. And when it came time for me to sit down, I was like, I know what comes next. I can't do this.
Now, what I did find interesting when we set out to do this tour back in 2015 is that every place where we've treated Black people poorly, there's now a museum or a center or some kind of tourist attraction. So, you know, so former hate, you know, tourism seems to be kind of a thing.
It is. I will say that there are a lot of people who make almost like pilgrimages to Montgomery now to go to all of these different sites, like Rosa Parks Museum or Dexter Avenue Baptist Church, where Dr. King was a pastor, or the new Equal Justice Initiative, different centers and memorials. And, you know, we still have people that who come from other parts of the country or from other countries who they're expecting to see that, like, 1955-56 racism, because they have, like, I guess that idea that we've been frozen in time in Montgomery. So it's really interesting to talk to those visitors.
Yeah, no, we did a whole bunch of these places all through Alabama, Mississippi, North Carolina, South Carolina, all throughout the South. We, you know, we were in all of these places and saw just some horrible things. And, you know, I think we need these kind of museums and centers and places to remember, you know, just how bad things were, so that we don't go back there. Because I look at where we are politically right now, I fear we're at a moment where, you know, things could get worse.
Yeah, we have the same fear. And, you know, unfortunately, the people who really need to learn this are not the ones who are coming. And we don't know exactly how to fix that. In the state of Alabama, critical race theory has just been banned. So does that mean that, you know, we can't be telling the story anymore? There's a lot of, you know, what ifs going on. We're still going to do it. But, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty around what's going on. And my colleagues and I have been really kind of on edge about it, especially right. This past year. And but we keep doing what we think, you know, Mrs. Parks would want us to do.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show with Madeline Burkhart. She's the Adult Education Coordinator and Curator at the Rosa Parks Museum on the campus of Troy University in Montgomery, Alabama. If you've got a question, thought, comment, something you want to chime in, give us a call, 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. Now, one of the things that, you know, again, I go back to this organizing, this community building exercise that I think is something that we can learn an awful lot about using our economic power and our ability to make change. I'll tell you, I was surprised at how well it was all put together, how quickly it all came together. Mm-hmm. Can you explain a little bit?
Yeah, so that earlier on I alluded to, like, multiple myths of December 1st, 1955. Another common one is that everything was planned. So, like, Rosa Parks was planted on that bus that evening to start the boycott. And that's just not true. She said that, and we're going by what she said. And there were people before Rosa Parks who had been arrested. And so there was talk amongst people in Montgomery, amongst the NAACP and other groups, you know, what can we do? So they kind of came up with this idea of boycotting the buses. They were just waiting for the right person and kind of the right time. And so December 1st, 1955 was just this perfect storm of events because Rosa Parks was the secretary for the NAACP. So they had an idea of what they wanted to do and kind of how to get it pulled together. So when that moment occurred, they could just make it happen so fast. And, like, even today with Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, everything, you know, I haven't seen that kind of organization that they had back then with just mimeograph machines and the home phones.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite remarkable. But you think about the community that was built out of this. And one of the things that I did learn in doing, you know, this tour, you know, we went into Jackson, Mississippi, for instance, and learned about Black Wall Street. And they were basically showing this community that was built where, you know, it was everyone was involved in it. And sadly, when as you know, the person who gave us the tour explained, as soon as You had the Brown versus Board of Education and the separate but equal thing taken away. All of that somehow got destroyed, and you know, it was one of those, you know, how did that happen kind of moments for me, because the way he was explaining it is, you know, they had actually figured out how to have a community, be prosperous, and stick together in ways that we don't see very often today.
Right. People in power don't want other groups to come in power, and they get really scared and frightened of those people. So when you are those people who are not in power and you are able to unite like that, you really can get stuff done. I mean, here they had the interstate cut through many Black neighborhoods, and I'm sure that it's like that in other parts of the country as well. And there's just that fear that they didn't want, you know, other people to mix with them because they were in power and they wanted to keep it that way.
Now, you said a moment ago that people, you know, think that it was all planned out. And I'll be honest with you, I'm one of those people who thinks that there was some planning that went on to that, because evidently she had had an experience with that driver in the past. Did he actually hit her is what I kind of remember when he threw her off a bus, you know, years earlier?
Yes. So she had an incident with a driver where she was just going to go in. At the time, you know, there was kind of the front entrance to the bus, and then there was an entrance kind of in the middle. And that's where, if you weren't white, you would go in that way. So if you weren't white, you would have to go up to the front of the bus, put your fare in the machine, then get off the bus, and then go right around to the back, to the middle entrance. And so Rosa Parks, she was going to pay. So she put her money in, and she was like, I'm just going to walk down the aisle. I'm not going to, you know, get off this bus just to
get on the entrance.
Right. It makes absolutely no sense. He did not like that. And the rule was then that bus drivers kind of had this, they could act as police during that time. And so she was actually charged with that night disobeying the bus driver, not for like a racial kind of, law at the time. But so the bus driver drove off because he got so mad at her and just left her standing there, was what that first incident was.
Yeah, but you look at that, and I had a nice conversation with Fred Gray, and you know, there's some wily looks that I got, or I just got the feeling. But you're telling me it was not planned, so I'm going to believe you. So in this day, what's the message that comes out of this?
The message is, in my opinion, the message is anyone can do something. You don't have to be necessarily in a position of power to do it. I think that is the beauty of Rosa Parks. She was just an everyday woman. Same with Dr. King, you know, and every other figurehead that we've seen. They weren't necessarily in a position of power before. So anyone can do something. Anyone can say no. They just have to find that, you know, inner Rosa Parks voice.
Yeah, I suggest anyone, if you're in Montgomery, Alabama, go to Troy University. Go to the Rosa Parks Museum there. It's phenomenal. Is it the actual bus, or is it a replica of the bus you guys have?
It's not. So it is a real 1955 Montgomery City bus. But so there's a very good chance that she was on it at some point. But the quote-unquote real bus that she was arrested on is actually at the Ford Museum in Dearborn, Michigan.
You know, I remember going through a lot of these places and going near that bus and, you know, and looking at, you know, the setup you guys have, which is phenomenal. And being that close to history was really powerful. You know, one of the other places I got that feeling was in Birmingham. There's the Civil Rights Museum there where they have Dr. King, the jail cell that Dr. King was at in Birmingham, where you can actually touch the cell bars. That was probably the only other place where you go, wow, this is actual living. This is actually history.
Yeah, and right now, so the museum is actually located on the site where Rosa Parks was arrested. And right now for the anniversary, we have taken her original fingerprints out of the vault, and they are on display next to that bus. So wow. I think it's just insanely powerful, even more powerful than normal.
No, and good stuff. If you want to check out their website, troy.edu/Rosa Parks, that will take you there. And you've got some stuff on display that you can see online, right?
We do. So we have a lot online. We're on Facebook mostly. We're a pretty small staff, so we have an easier time keeping up with Facebook than anything else. So all of our programs and things that we've done recently, they're all saved on our Facebook page, including the statue unveiling that we had today.
It's an incredible place. Keep up the great work. I hope to make it back down there sometime very soon. But Madeline, I appreciate you taking some time and sharing some thoughts with us.
Sure, yeah. Thank you. Anytime.
Great stuff. Thank you so much. This is one of those moments where, you know, I still remember going through this museum with the kids. And, you know, the look of awe on their face. And in a lot of these places, like I said, you know, tourism, hate-filled tourism seems to be a thing now. You know, we went through a whole bunch of places that, you know, you just look at the tragedy. We ended up in one place that the curator, you know, said, you know, because my kids were small at the time. And he's like, you know, I'm going to have someone come take your kids to the other side of this. They're not going to want to see this. And we walk through this place and it's, you know, it's burning bodies on crosses. It's people hanging. It's the horrible stuff that people did to other people that I got to tell you has to be seen and remembered. So she brought up, you know, critical race theory a second ago. All I know is that, you know, they're crazy people who are against the theory that's critical. I want my kids to learn actual history, which is why we went to those places, why we wanted to touch the history, why we did the background research so that when we got there, we knew what we were looking at. I don't know that any parent doesn't want their kids to understand the history. When we walked up the stairs to the Central High School in Arkansas, thinking about the little girl who, you know, was trying to go to that school, or in Birmingham, the school there that was desegregated, and the kind of hate that was thrown at them. You know, you think about it. I think about that little girl, you know, walking into the school. If she can endure what harassment and threats and hate just to go to school, I think your kids and mine, we can maybe learn about it, see a picture about it, hear just a little bit about what, you know, they did back then. Not that I did it. I'm not responsible for what they did in the past, but learn from it and then say, you know what? We're not going to do it again. I don't think that's difficult. I really don't. I don't think it's difficult at all to be in a place where we're going to learn from history. We're going to learn the lessons. We're going to not do it again. Pretty simple. But, you know, I'll tell you, some of the things that we saw were just incredible. And, you know, look, if you're in Birmingham, that place, the Rosa Parks Museum, if you're in Birmingham, the Civil Rights Center there is incredible, right across the street from the 16th Street Baptist Church that got blown up. I got stories from there as well. It was heartbreaking stuff. Love to hear your thoughts. You got any questions, comments on this? Love to hear it. You can email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, Max Burns is going to be here to share some thoughts on the day in the Supreme Court and maybe some other stuff. Quick break. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Time to talk.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1966. That was the day that the registered nurses of the Youngstown General Duty Nurses Association walked out of their jobs. Nursing could be a grueling profession, with long hours of physical labor for low pay. In Youngstown, the nurses were frustrated because there were inconsistencies in pay. Some recently hired nurses made more than those who had been working for years. Part-time nurses did not receive the same wage increases as full-time employees. They also did not feel that they had enough say in delivering quality care for their patients. When they asked to meet with the hospital's executive director to discuss their concerns, the nurses were rebuffed. They then contacted the Ohio Nurses Association Union and asked for help. Youngstown was a steel town, a union town, and the nurses were ready to join in the local labor movement. At first, the Youngstown Hospital Association refused to bargain with the union. But when the nurses threatened to walk out, negotiations began. After 2 months of talking at the bargaining table, major issues remained unsettled, including pay and union recognition. Fed up, the nurses called for a mass resignation. 305 of the 433 nurses turned in their resignations. two-thirds of them were part-time nurses. They formed informational picket lines outside the hospitals. A federal mediator was brought in to settle the dispute. In the end, the nurses won significant gains. They received a more than 25% raise over 2 years. A grievance procedure was established for the first time, but most importantly, the union gained recognition and the right to bargain for better wages, hours, and conditions for the nurses and their patients. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So yesterday I announced that Dr. Oz was going to be running for Senate as a Republican in Pennsylvania. And I got this, a listener sent me a really long email to let me know that Dr. Oz has a very long history of peddling medical misinformation. And I'm like, yeah, of course. That's why he's running as a Republican. Those are the people who are going to vote for him. It fits. So when it fits, understand it's who they are. Now, he claims he's a moderate. That was back, 2007. Still was Trump's guy on health and fitness. So we will see. We'll see what Dr. Oz brings. We'll see if Oprah actually comes out and supports him. But here to share some thoughts on, the top stories of the day. I've asked our good friend Max Burns to come talk with us. Max is a Democratic strategist, also daily columnist over at the Daily Beast. He's got a new piece out we're going to talk a little bit about. But Max, thanks for taking time for us.
Anytime. How are you?
I am good. So let me ask you, what do you think? Dr. Oz for Senate? What do you think?
I'm all in. I've been saying for years that what the country needs is someone who has no idea why he's there. I mean, he doesn't live in Pennsylvania. He was only a Republican as of about 2 days ago. The guy doesn't seem to have any idea what the Senate does. Sure, sounds great. I'm sure he's going to do fantastic.
And that is exactly why the Republicans will vote for him, because they're the party of, let's destroy government and let's have the dumbest. I'm not saying he's dumb, but politically the dumbest guy in the room running things.
Yeah, at this point, you need to essentially be a very successful con man to even get a hearing within the Republican Party. If you haven't defrauded at least 100,000 Americans, you're not qualified to be a member of the Republican Party at this point. And it really is, though, on a more serious note, it's deeply unfortunate because Dr. Oz's nonsensical quack advice has actually hurt people. And that's something he has never fully accounted for. And I hope this at least gives people a chance to hold his feet to the fire on that kind of stuff.
Now, I'm wondering, now that you're going into the big fishbowl, how much of that starts coming out? And look, do Republican voters care? And this is where I'm at. I don't think they care. I don't care what he does, how horrible it is. I don't think they care.
No, and Dr. Oz, what's fascinating, if you watch his intro video, spends the first minute or two bashing Donald Trump for how many people his ineptitude killed with regards to COVID, and then says, too many people have died. This is the same Dr. Oz who was on Fox News saying 2-3% of American school kids could die of COVID, but that's, worth the cost of keeping schools open. That's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
So apparently Dr. Oz has a wildly different scale on acceptable death than I think the rest of us do.
It's crazy times. And I'll tell you, I'm really concerned because here's somebody who has the means. He's got name recognition, and there are people, he's Donald Trump's guy, click. Really, really concerning. Speaking of Donald Trump's guy, today, the January 6th committee voted 9-0 to hold Trump's former DOJ official Jeffrey Clark in contempt. Evidently, Clark was one of the key figures in Trump's effort to overturn the election. Evidently, what I'm hearing, he's now come around and said that he'll come in, but he's going to plead the fifth. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, and it's looking now like the move on Steve Bannon to arrest him and indict him federally for contempt has really loosened a lot of tongues. I know Mark Meadows said he's coming in. A few others have said that they'll come in and cooperate. A few are trying to negotiate conditions as if this is a business deal and not an investigation into undermining the American Republic. But you know, I think it's important that Steve Bannon saw consequences. I think that reasserted the power of the congressional subpoena, and it's going to keep this congressional committee moving in a way that it was not before.
No, this is good. Look, I don't care if you go in there and you plead the fifth to everything. You got to sit in the seat. It's your right to plead the fifth, and it's my right to go, well, what are you hiding? And have people keep digging, but you got to be in that seat.
Yeah, that's right. And if it's going to be a circus, which it might, we saw with Corey Lewandowski during the Trump impeachment, he didn't plead the fifth. He didn't refuse to go. He went and made a circus out of his hearing. But it's important that the American people see that. They see that these people aren't serious, that they have contempt for democracy. They have contempt for you and for me. And I think that that played a powerful role in 2020. Yeah. So if they want to sit there and refuse to help investigate one of the biggest civil insurrections in American history, I think the American people should know that.
No, I'm right there with you. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show with Max Burns, Democratic strategist, columnist over at The Daily Beast. You can check out his work at The Daily Beast there. He's got a new piece out on, well, you know, today's Supreme Court. It's titled Supreme Court Makes Clear the Unthinkable is Here on Abortion. Do you think it was unthinkable? I've been saying this is what this court was assembled for. They're just doing what was preordained. There's no surprise here.
Yeah, this is one of the only times I had an argument with my editor, because it's quite thinkable. This has been Mitch McConnell and before him, generations of Republican leaders plan from the beginning to say, we're not going to bother with legislation. We're not going to bother with doing things. We're going to focus just on courts. And when we get enough, you're going to see why that was such a smart investment. And, you know, in a very grim view, it seems to have been an investment that paid off. But if Republicans succeed in toppling Roe versus Wade, they're almost assured to topple themselves along with it. Because now they'll be forced to defend doing something that upwards of 80% of Americans, including almost half of Republicans, support.
Yeah,
that's something Democrats are dreaming for.
No, this is one of those cases where the dog has caught the car, and you got to be wondering, you know, where they go, because once this issue goes away, they have nothing really to keep people stupid over. It's going to revert back to the states. And that's where, you know, I've been saying the activism then begins, because some of these solidly red states could then be somewhat in play for moderate Democrats who are saying, no, we want the right to have women have the right to choose. We don't want working class and poor women dead in back alleys. We don't want to return to those days.
And I think that's a powerful message. We saw that suburban Republican women who sort of abandoned the GOP in 2020 to support Biden sort of trickled back with Terry McAuliffe in Virginia in 2021. Those are the voters who may be fiscally conservative. They may not like critical race theory or whatever Republicans have concocted today, but they also vehemently support abortion rights and always have. And they were willing to overlook what they saw as theatrical Republican opposition to abortion. But now that Republicans are actually taking your rights away, those suburban Republican women are not laughing. And those are the people who are going to be the margin for whether Democrats hold the House and Senate or not.
Yeah. No, I had someone, you know, say to me today, you know, boy, do you think they'll overturn 50 years of decided law? And I'm like, yeah, of course they will. They did it to the Abood decision a couple of years ago that made this country a right to work country for public sector workers. And they didn't think twice. Trust me, this is their goal. They're going to do it.
It is. And there's an excellent point that a spokesman for NARAL made in my column, which is that this is a similar situation to the Affordable Care Act. People got complacent. They said, there's never going to be a time when the Supreme Court would strike down ACA. It's too embedded in our society. And yet, when those people got complacent, didn't show up to the polls, Republicans were elected who ultimately put judges in who have weakened ACA. They're doing the same thing with abortion rights. They will do the same thing with gay and trans rights. This is a strategy that now Republicans know can work. They have the court they've waited for. And now it's just getting as many test cases in line as possible.
Now, what I found interesting is the Mississippi case, you know, was written in a way that would go, you know, kind of halfway. You know, we're going to, and I think a lot of people were thinking, you know, they're going to incrementally move their way towards undoing the whole thing. And now some of the responses I'm seeing are going, no, no, they're accelerating that move to undoing it now. Do you get the same thoughts?
Yeah, this is a bigger swing than I think some people expected. As you saw, Brett Kavanaugh essentially making a states' rights argument on this. And, you know, as we've all seen from the past, that never ends well. The states rarely ever get in the business of giving people rights. It's mainly a state's right to take away something from you. We saw Samuel Alito in one of the most disgusting things I have ever seen in politics compare the Roe versus Wade abortion law to Plessy versus Ferguson, the law that said Black Americans weren't people and couldn't file cases in court, and said both were wrongly decided and both should go. I mean, we've reached a level of mask-off rhetoric that Democrats can listen to now or they can ignore. Yeah. And if we do not make abortion the issue for this campaign cycle, that will be our failing for generations to come.
Not just abortion. I mean, you know, voting rights, another part of this, workers' rights. There's so much that, you know, where I started with this, Max, is, you know, the reality is you've got one political party who's hell-bent on tearing down the 20th century. You've got one political party who wants to take us back to the Stone Ages, and you've got another that I don't see doing enough. And I'm at this point where, you know, you got to do something. You got to ball up your little digits, get in there and throw some punches. At this point, there should be legislation put forth, and we should be doing something on the filibuster to ensure that people's rights are in place.
Yep, and I think you may see some momentum on that. I saw Susan Collins mentioned that she was now in support of a law codifying Roe versus Wade through Congress. That's going to require getting rid of the filibuster, which she does not support. So until she supports that, she really doesn't support any kind of abortion rights.
Right. This is,
and
it's all
these
rhetoric.
Are the conversations. Yeah.
It's all rhetoric.
These are the conversations we need to have on the campaign trail. Because if you'll notice, for all of their aggression in the courts, Republicans are almost totally silent about abortion on the campaign trail. They want to talk about anything but abortion because they know that their own voters want them to keep Roe versus Wade. So the more Democrats force this conversation, the more we're setting the stage for 2022 in a way that Democrats can actually win.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting to me, though. You've got the party of family values, or so they want us to believe, the folks who are the anti-abortion party. And you go, okay, well, if you're against abortion, how about making conditions so that people can bring children into this world and not bring them into poverty? You know, like universal pre-K, like, you know, family medical leave, like, you know, the $250 a month to help keep kids out of poverty. You know, how about all of those things that are kind of in that Build Back Better plan that you're doing everything you can possibly do to make sure it doesn't pass? How about making the environment better for families to be able to bring children into this world instead of worrying about if they're going to be in poverty? How about doing that?
Yeah, I wish we could get any kind of good faith discussion going. I think of Amy Coney Barrett, who today said that essentially Roe versus Wade isn't needed anymore because of safe haven laws in 50 states that say you can give up an unwanted pregnancy, no questions asked. And that essentially alleviates the need to have an abortion at all, since you don't have to raise the child. And Amy Coney Barrett knows the pain and the damage that pregnancy causes to you. Amy Coney Barrett has children of her own. You don't just spring back up from a pregnancy ready to get back to work and get the economy moving again. These are deeply disingenuous arguments, and they're meant to mask just how extreme the Supreme Court is about to go in its decision to kill Roe.
Yeah. Now, my next thought is, Max, and this is where, you know, again, I've said from the beginning, you know, and this is, you know, going years ago, that, you know, Roe is going to be the first domino to topple. The next one will eventually be Griswold. And I believe that kind of came up from Barrett today, didn't it? That she was kind of reassuring people that, you know, that's not what's going to happen next.
Yeah, it did. And what we've seen is that we can't trust the Supreme Court to enforce its own standards. What we saw today with John Roberts was the Mississippi Attorney General submitting one argument to the court in a written argument for how they were going to proceed with this case, and arriving to oral arguments, making a case entirely about killing Roe versus Wade, something they never mentioned in their written brief. Normally that would get you tossed out for lack of merit, but John Roberts and the Republicans decided to allow this to continue. So it really is a free-for-all in the Supreme Court right now. It's hard to take seriously anything that they're putting forward.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those moments where you go, I had thought originally it was going to be a 5-4 decision. I thought Roberts would probably side with, but I'm kind of looking at it going, I think it's going to be 6-3.
Yeah, it likely will. And even if it's sort of narrowly tailored, that's still going to be devastating. Getting rid of the 24-week window, right now Mississippi has a 15-week ban. You can't get an abortion after 15 weeks. Passing this essentially kills Roe in practice. And it means that if you live in Florida, you're surrounded by states that have closed their abortion clinics legally under this new guidance. If you live in Miami, you would have to drive almost 700 miles before you get to the first abortion clinic. That's the reality of what this means. And that's what people need to know.
Yeah.
That's the story Democrats need to tell.
No, as I said from the beginning, rich people are going to get what they need because they always do. Rich women will be fine. It's going to be the poor and the working class are the ones that suffer through all of this, and the ones that are in the horrible positions of the past. I mean, I remember my mother telling stories of a friend who had to go to Kentucky, I guess it was, to get a backroom abortion, end up being botched, and the girl ended up dying. And, she remembered that, and that's not what I want for my daughters.
Yeah, and it's sad that we've reached this point of illegitimacy on the court. This Roe versus Wade has been upheld over the past 5 decades by Democratic courts, by Republican courts. The core points of Roe and then Casey after that have never really been seriously questioned. The fact that we've gone from a Supreme Court case that until today had almost nothing publicly to do with Roe to now being, hey, since we're here, let's take out abortion rights and save us another trip to Washington, I think really tells you exactly what Republicans prioritize, and it's not the law.
What's the message coming out of this? Is this now you start building on the state level to start fighting for those laws? What's the marching order out of this?
Yeah, it's time to fight. I think Democrats, in a very sad way that I wish was not necessary, have been gifted an issue that will win them the 2022 election. Abortion is, believe it or not, not divisive. 80% of Americans support legal abortion and protecting Roe. This is an argument that will cut to the core of a shaky Republican coalition, but we have to sell that argument. And that has to become our main driving argument. People will want to talk infrastructure, but we've got to stick with what wins.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to see how this comes out. When are we expecting a decision? What, sometime over the summer?
Yeah, this is going to come right as the 2022 campaign season starts heating up. So rest assured, all of the activist groups I've spoken to have already begun preparing for every potentiality.
Now, I'm expecting it to be dropped on the day they're heading out of town. Cause a little chaos, find your way out of town. But Max, I appreciate the time. Great talking with you. Hope folks will check out the most recent article over at Daily Beast. The Supreme Court makes clear the unthinkable is here on abortion, written by Max Burns. Max, thanks so much, man.
Thank you.
Good stuff, our good friend Max Burns. Again, make sure you check out his work. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1955. That was the day that Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat to a white passenger on a bus in Montgomery, Alabama. With that action, she helped to launch the civil rights movement in the United States. Rosa Parks is often portrayed as simply a weary woman, tired from a long day of work as a seamstress. While that was true, she was also a member of the NAACP, who had been trained in race relations at the Highlander Folk School in Tennessee. Her refusal to give up her seat was a political act. When she was arrested, E.D. Nixon looked into what happened. Nixon was a leader of his union, the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters. He called the police department to inquire about Parks, only to be told it was none of your damn business. He found a lawyer and posted her bail. Leaders in the black community decided to declare a bus boycott for the following Monday. They called themselves the Montgomery Improvement Association. The first day of the boycott was a rounding success, but many wanted to end the action. At a meeting of the Montgomery Improvement Association, Nixon gave an impassioned speech where he said, "What's the matter with you people? We have been living off the sweat of these washermen all of these years, and you have never done anything for them. Now you can have a chance to pay them back. And you're too damn scared to stand on your feet and be counted." They decided to continue the boycott. In order to keep it going, organizers established a private taxi service to ensure that black residents could get to and from work. For more than a year, they kept up the boycott until they won their fight for desegregation.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at laborhistoryin2.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.